inspiring, bold, progress, movement. These are just a few words that come to mind when I think about all of the collective action happening in the streets, on the picket lines, and on the shop floor. Working people in Oregon and across this country are fed up with a rigged economic system that isn't working for them, and they're doing something about it. Unions are gaining in popularity at levels not seen in 50 years. More workers are taking bold action at work than at any time since the 1980s. It's exciting, it's important, and it gives me a lot of hope for what working people can accomplish when we stand together. I'm Graham Traynor, Oregon AFL-CIO President, and you're listening to The Voice of Oregon's Workers, a monthly podcast from the Oregon AFL-CIO. As the State Federation of Labor Unions in Oregon, we proudly represent over 300,000 working people in every facet of our state's economy, and we serve as a strong voice for all workers, whether they have a union on the job or not. We're here to bring you the stories every month about the people and the organizations who are changing what it means to stand together and build power for working people.
Welcome to the Voice of Oregon's Workers. I'm Russell Sanders, Communications Director for the Oregon AFL-CIO. This month, we're doing our podcast a little bit differently to maintain our social distancing. I'm joined via telephone by Oregon AFL-CIO President Graham Traynor and Oregon AFL-CIO Political Director Jess Genetino Villatoro. We're going to talk about the coronavirus, COVID-19, how the spread of it is impacting working people, and what you can do right now to help frontline workers. The spread of COVID-19 is a once-in-a-generation public health crisis. Everyone on our planet impacted in one way or another. Since the spread of COVID-19 was labeled a pandemic by the World Health Organization, Oregon's unions have been doing everything we can to protect all working people, including healthcare workers, first responders, grocery and retail workers, transit workers, and everyone else who is our front line against COVID. In the labor movement, we show our solidarity by showing up. We go to picket lines, rallies, volunteer political events, and more because we know our voices are louder when we speak together as one. This crisis is different. It requires us to show solidarity in isolation. Our hope is that today's episode can give you a bigger picture on how unions are adapting during this challenging time. Let's get into it. What segments of Oregon's diverse union workforce are impacted by COVID?
I'll just first remind everyone about the unique challenges we're facing. Workers in Oregon and across the country are at the same time facing an unprecedented jobs and public health crisis. And I'd also like to remind our listeners about the economic situation that was facing working people before this crisis took hold just a couple weeks ago. You know, despite GDP and unemployment numbers breaking records, we always ask the question, were those gains being felt by working people, even again before this crisis? You know, I like to remind folks that unemployment was really low just a couple weeks ago, only because involuntary part-time work is high or was high. And working people, and especially workers of color and women, were being left behind day after day by the gains that we had been seeing. And to put this all into context, as of just a few weeks ago, the three richest Americans owned more wealth than the bottom 50% of the entire population of the U.S. So now, workers are facing an additional crisis. This crisis is affecting every working person, and it's touching the lives of every family. There are also dramatic differences in how this is hitting workers depending on the part of the economy that they work in. So for example, firefighters and paramedics are on the front lines and continuing to take the call to serve and protect the public and the public at large. Nurses and allied health workers, represented by a number of our affiliate unions, are continuing to deal with patients despite the challenges facing them with inadequate PPE, protective equipment, insufficient bed space in hospitals. Grocery workers, while the economy around grocery stores shuts down, grocery workers are still having to go to work, just like pharmacy workers inside those same grocery stores. Transportation and public transit workers are continuing to serve the public, the riding public. Even as ridership has declined, these workers are still showing up and serving the greater good. And there's so many other types of workers that are still having to show up to work that potentially risk exposure at the same time. And then there are tens of thousands of workers who have seen mass layoffs, curtailments, in their workplaces. So it really depends on the part of the economy that workers find themselves in, but there's no question that there's a common theme across the economy. Every working person and their families are facing an economic and jobs crisis. And I look forward to this conversation to get into what the labor movement in Oregon is doing about it.
Fantastic. Jess, what's going on with independent contractors and undocumented workers?
Thanks, Russell. So up until the Federal CARES Act passed, independent contractors were categorically excluded from drawing unemployment insurance. The Federal CARES Act included them, details TBD, but I think that it's important to highlight both independent contractors and undocumented workers are in this moment exposing the fabric that labor law, exposing the holes in the fabric of labor law in a way that we haven't seen before. I think worker advocates would say that we have been saying these things about the lack of protection to both undocumented workers and independent contractors have for a long time. But COVID-19 has presented an unprecedented strain on the economy, and I think really highlighted the lack of basic protections that everyday workers need, especially in light of COVID-19. I think the other problem that COVID-19 is exposing full bore is, you know, often there are negotiations that happen between worker advocates and employers around critical protections that workers need. And part of those negotiations always include which types of workers get which protections based on the size of their employer. That doesn't make sense in a pandemic. There is no reason why all workers shouldn't have access to scheduling protections, because right now, workers are being asked to go to work and they don't have childcare because childcare slowed down. Every worker should have the right to say, I can't work the night shift because I have a 5-year-old and my partner works the night shift. And these are, you know, built into the fabric of all of the worker protections that we care a lot about. And I think that COVID-19 presents both a really big problem, but also a really big opportunity to think about these type of phased-in protections or protections only for employers over a certain size don't make sense because all workers deserve basic protections.
That's so concerning to see that how many people are just left out of labor law protections. Are we hearing anything about how many folks are expected to be laid off in the coming months?
I think every day we are hearing more and more about the types of workers who are laid off. Just yesterday, workers that work for Metro from Laborers 483, the IA represented workers, and AFSCME represented workers are losing their entire economic stability. And I think the numbers that you saw federally yesterday were that 3.3 million Americans filed for unemployment for the first time. And I think as more and more employers try to determine whether or not they can comply with social distancing measures, and more workers saying that their employers are not complying with social distancing, the effects of it could grow.
Jeez. So what are Oregon's unions doing to advocate for workers during this crisis?
Yeah, so it's a big question to answer, but I'm gonna tackle it in a couple different ways. So, you know, just like this crisis is posing an all-out attack on our health, our livelihoods, and our economy, the labor movement is helping lead the counterattack at every level. And I'm just going to share a couple of those ways that plays out. You know, we're working to support individual unions in the state and affiliates with the challenges that their members are facing, like PPE shortages, like I mentioned earlier, navigating state agency assistance, communicating with their members about the crisis. Our team is working directly with state agencies as well to expand the worker safety net that is so needed in this critical time. And the points that Jess made are incredibly poignant as it relates to the safety net and the holes and the gaps that this crisis is presenting. We're engaging with the executive branch and the governor's office and an economic advisory committee set up to help workers and businesses in the near term and to help our economy recover once this is all behind us. We're helping lift the voices of workers and impacted communities with legislators and elected leaders to ensure that they make worker-centered decisions on how to respond to the crisis. We're working with our federal delegation to ensure that our unions better understand the details of the various stimulus and support bills Congress has passed in the last few weeks and making sure that they continue to hold the line for workers when efforts to bail out corporate America are underway. And we're supporting workers who've been laid off and dislocated throughout the state through our workforce program led by our workforce liaison, John Irvine. So every element of the Oregon AFL-CIO's team and fabric is really working to support all working people in one way or another in this moment, in this crisis that is again being felt across the economy. And I couldn't be more proud of the team and what we have been able to do in just the last few weeks and what we're preparing to do in the coming weeks as this crisis continues to take hold.
That's great. Yeah, it's inspiring to see, I think, not only what we're doing in Oregon, but unions around the country are also, you know, putting their shoulder to the wheel on this stuff. And it's definitely inspiring, and I think what needs to happen in this crisis. What kind of policies do we need to protect frontline workers?
So, thanks, Russell. Previously, I mentioned that undocumented workers are categorically excluded from accessing unemployment insurance and other benefits. This is particularly problematic in light of the Trump administration's public charge rule that says, no matter what, when you come try to become a citizen, and you have accessed public benefits, then becoming a citizen becomes difficult or impossible. So along with a lot of our partners, including CALSA and SOCOON and the Immigrant and Innovation Law Lab, there's an ask to the legislature and subsequently local governments to set up an alternate fund to ensure that undocumented workers can continue to pay the same bills that the rest of us have through this really difficult time. That ask is critical that it be funded, or else you're going to have an entire swath of Oregon's economy that is left behind at a time where we're seeing unprecedented levels of investment in unemployment insurance. I think additionally, what are the policies that need to come into place? There's a whole swath of them, right? So if we looked at what all the things that need to make a working family safe at this unprecedented economic challenge and public health crisis, everything from housing stability to childcare access to a presumption of workers' comp for workers who are exposed to ensuring that the criminal justice system is complying with social distancing and public health measures, all of those things are critically important. And there are a number of asks out to the legislature now, and we're happy to share the resources that we have put together over that time.
Fantastic. Thanks for giving us the rundown on that. So what stands in our way to get workers the help they need? What's our opposition looking like in this crisis?
I have spent a lot of time doing defensive work in my time at the Federation, and I have never seen such an unprecedented level of what I would categorize as nonsensical asks from the business community. They have gone to state agencies and to the legislature to ask for rollbacks of scheduling protections for grocery workers. These are workers who don't have access to PPE. These are workers who, if they didn't show up to work, none of us would get fed. And it's pretty, I think I would call it short-sighted and disappointing to see Oregon's employers try to roll back protections for workers that are showing up every day to ensure that our communities continue functioning.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that's definitely shocking to see and very disappointing at the same time.
So the only thing I would add, Russell, is, that there are lots of examples, both in Oregon and across the country, where the corporate agenda is alive and well. One example that I wanted to highlight and make sure listeners had seen in the news is that just a few, literally less than a handful of Republican senators just the other day held up the stimulus bill, the unprecedented $2 trillion stimulus bill, because they claimed that unemployment insurance benefits were too generous. So that's, I think, an illustration of some of the challenges we face. I'll also just say that, as Jess talked about some of the firsthand experiences with defending against efforts to roll back and weaken protections for working people in this moment, the union movement in Oregon and across the country will continue to remain vigilant in defending these worker protections that we've won, and to push back on any of these attempts by corporate Oregon to erode and unravel critical regulations and policy that really aimed at protecting workers. Because at the end of the day, the economy wasn't working for most working people before the crisis. I think that's a really important point to remember. The economy was leaving too many people behind before this crisis took hold. So why on earth would we make it worse when we are in a recovery situation? So again, I just wanted to touch on those couple examples in addition to what Jess mentioned.
Well said. So outside of that policy work, what can we do to support frontline workers?
Well, thanks, Russell, for the question. You know, there's no question that there are incredible needs of working people in this state. And the Oregon Labor Movement and the Oregon AFL-CIO is really working hard to be responsive to what some of those needs might look like and what they might be. You know, we have dedicated a significant chunk of our website, so orafl-cio.org. There's a COVID-specific set of resources that is updated regularly, so we encourage working people, affiliate unions, and members of our affiliated unions to check that out if there's anything that might be there, from state agency support to individual sector-specific information. Lots of good stuff there. We're going to continue to keep that updated and hope that that's a set of resources that working people can access and find useful. I also just wanted to call out a couple different things that I think I've been really proud of along the way over the last few weeks. One example is this existential PPE shortage crisis that's facing our healthcare system and our hospitals, and of course by extension frontline workers in the healthcare setting. You know, a few weeks ago, I think it was actually just last week, we started to get some questions from several of our building trades unions, especially Laborers Local 737 and the District Council, for how they might be able to help, how they could help with this PPE shortage. And one of the coolest things that I've seen in the last few weeks was seeing building trades unions, leaders, members, track down from their contractors, from their training centers, from their partners, different types of PPE that could be donated into the healthcare system. That was a really proud moment that I think highlights and illustrates the solidarity that we're seeing within the labor movement despite the challenging times. I also wanted to call out Labor's Community Service Agency in Portland, the Portland area, an organization that is doing all kinds of important work to support those in need in our labor family and in our communities. So check out Labor's Community Service Agency on the web. They've got a number of different calls to action as well that you can find through their web presence. But again, those are just a couple of the really proud examples that I'd like to share today about the things that really highlight how working people are coming together. They're sticking together. They're mindful of the challenges facing different types of workers, and they're doing everything they can to support the most vulnerable in our community.
Thanks, Graham. Yeah, that's all very helpful and inspiring stuff for sure. So what's happening at the federal level to help Oregonians?
Lots is happening at the federal level. I think everyone has seen that there's been a lively debate in the last week or so in Congress, especially in the U.S. Senate. That's now transferred over to the House for the third potentially more bills to come, and the debate over what the federal government can do to truly support working people, small businesses, and industries that are struggling in this moment. The third stimulus bill was passed across the House floor. It is the largest stimulus bill in American history, to the tune of $2 trillion. So as you can imagine, this has been a moving target, lots of changes and revisions. And I think the labor movement and the community partners are still analyzing all of the details in the bill. But a couple things I'll just highlight. First of all, it includes an education stabilization fund to the tune of $30 billion. It includes a transit fund to the tune of $25 billion. It includes a $4.3 billion effort to support the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It also includes $150 billion for a coronavirus relief fund for state and local governments. That's going to be really critical to the on-the-ground work we're doing here in Oregon. It includes a $45 billion disaster relief fund for governments to protect and help citizens. I know one of the provisions that is on folks' mind is the direct payments to working people. And that provides a $1,200 direct payment to many Americans and $500 for each dependent child. And also, I think a really important safety net point that I wanted to make is that it expands even further unemployment insurance from 3 to 4 months, and it provides unemployment compensation of an additional $600 per week, which means that many working people will actually, through their state unemployment system, receive as much or nearly as much of their wage loss that they've faced in the event of a layoff. So I think lots of good things were in the bill. It was a timely and important package. But our request of our members of Congress and leadership in Washington, D.C. is that just because this bill has passed now, doesn't mean that we're done. We must do more. The package doesn't address critical aspects of the coronavirus, issues that threaten the lives of working people and the integrity of our democracy. The package has no workplace standard and no increased funding for the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, and more needs to be done immediately to make sure that we get protective equipment to the people who need it most, which is a common theme we've been talking about throughout this conversation. So lots is happening, but lots, so much more is needed. I'm looking forward to the conversations in the coming days and week about what this all means for our state legislative branch and our state government for what's possible here to protect working people and small businesses in this moment.
Thanks for that analysis, Graham. I'm sure a lot of folks will find that helpful. In many ways, those impacted most by this pandemic are the same people who have been left behind economically before this all happened, like we've said a few different times in this conversation, but it's a really important point that you're gonna hear a lot from the labor movement about. Really, COVID is exposing the deep gaps in our safety net and highlighting just how far corporations are willing to go to put profits over workers. What needs to happen in the long term to make the systemic changes we need for a fair and just economy for all?
That is a big question, Russell. I mean, I think fundamentally we've got to shift when we talk about making policies that impact employers and workers alike. Everything that I mentioned before about, only granting protections to certain types of workers or only granting them protections to types of workers who have a bunch of other workers around them, that conversation's got to go. Regardless of your documentation status, regardless of your employee classification, regardless of the type of work you do, you need to have basic fundamental protections. And right now, Oregon's policy landscape, the national policy landscape, doesn't grant for that. I think secondarily, we've got to think about enforcement capacity to ensure that workplaces are safe. Right now, Oregon OSHA has, little capacity to ensure that employers are following social distancing guidelines, and that there are places for workers to wash their hands, and that where possible there is, hand sanitizer available. If workers are still going to work today, they need to be able to be safe. And there cannot be a gray line that says, well, if your employer has no other way to do that work, then you've got to continue doing it. Because quite literally, workers' lives are at stake, and their families' lives are at stake. And this time for tiptoeing about what we have authority to do and what previous case law allows is over. I also think that we need to think about expanding labor law reform. When we talk about workers in Oregon's economy who have someone to call when their employer isn't following social distancing guidelines, those workers have a union and they have someone who can advocate for them. I've spent the past week thinking about food processing workers. Many of them have no union, and they have no one to call when their employer says, you have to come to work. These workers are standing within a foot of each other, touching the same goods as they go by them. If they had a union, they would have a different structure in place to ensure that their rights were protected. I think the other thing that has become starkly clear to me over the past week is that we need pro-worker champions at every level of government. I was watching a legislative hearing earlier this week, and a Democrat who was in a high-ranking position within the legislature said, oh, well, it's okay. We're just talking about rolling back overtime and scheduling protections at a time when workers who are still working are working more than they ever have. And it's just like a short-term fix. So it'll be fine if they go without these protections. That is not a legislator that we need in office.
Well said. Yeah, the stakes are just too high right now for that kind of stuff. How do you envision our economy after this is all over?
Yeah, that's a tough question to answer, but I'll just share a couple things that I've been thinking a lot about. There's no question that that working people are banding together and are supporting one another in our immediate communities, in our former workplaces or through our former workplace connections, in our own unions, and that gives me a lot of hope and inspiration about how we can weather an existential challenge like we're facing right now. And there's no question that that this is going to probably get worse before it gets better. And so for working people, that's a tough pill to swallow. There's no question about it. But I think that some of the things that I've seen over the last few weeks give me a lot of hope. I've seen, again, working people come together. I've seen smart policy experts that have been in the throes of how to better protect working people with our safety net. I've been impressed by the thoughtfulness that folks are coming to the table with solutions with. And frankly, I think that our labor movement, our labor community, and our progressive partners are going to come out of this stronger. I think that there are going to be opportunities to really highlight who the heroes are in this moment. I've been thinking a lot about this question of who the real heroes are, when we think about this crisis. And I can tell you, nobody's thinking that corporate CEOs and billionaires are heroes in this moment. Who are the heroes in my mind are the people that are going to work at a grocery store and dealing with the potential exposure every single day. The people in my mind who are heroes are the people that are working in the frontline healthcare system, caring for the patients that we need to get better to ensure that we slow the spread of this really horrible pandemic. The heroes in my mind are the first responders, the transportation workers, and everyone that's still really working hard to come together and do what they do best, which is go to work and serve the public. And so I think that there's an opportunity to really highlight the value that different types of work has in our community and in our society coming out of this. Because again, I don't think anyone believes that, again, the top 1% or the 0.1% among us are the heroes and that are going to save this economy. It's actually the people that we're doing the work. And I think the value that that people are now seeing firsthand, I really feel like will pay off down the road. And it'll be something that we can look back upon as a moment of strength. And I think down the road, our movement will be stronger for it. I also believe that the exposure that we're seeing in terms of the holes, the gaps in our safety net, I used the gaps and the cracks, I think, to describe the things that we're seeing in testimony that I provided the other day. But I think that those gaps and those cracks that we're seeing and that Jess has talked about and is working on filling and protecting or improving, I should say, I believe that we're going to have policy opportunities to also make our safety net work for more working people in the future because of what this is exposing. And so I have a lot of hope in what's possible coming out of this. I have a lot of hope with about the organizing opportunities coming out of this and the membership growth opportunities coming out of this. Jess touched on that a little bit ago in terms of what a union provides. I think that union difference is going to be on full display when we come out of this. And I'm really proud of the work that we're doing, but I'm also excited about, as challenging as it is to remember this in this time of crisis, I'm really excited about what's possible in terms of strengthening our movement and worker protections in the state and in this nation as we are on the other side of this looking back.
Amen. Jess, what can we do right now to make a difference?
You know, I just want to go back to a little bit about what Graham said earlier about the economy before this. If we think about the people who have the ability to telework, the people who have the ability to maintain economic stability right now, those are largely higher wage, largely white, largely dominant culture communities. And then we think about those who have sacrificed the most right now. They have lost all of their income and they cannot work. Those are largely lower wage jobs, largely jobs performed by women and people of color. So to me, what the labor movement is about, it's about solidarity and it's about justice. And the labor movement knows that in order to perform both of those things, you have to sacrifice a little bit in order to keep the most vulnerable afloat. And to me, that is what staying home means, right? Like, does it stink? A little bit. But there are people in our community and in Oregon's workforce who this stinks for a lot more. And the least those of us can do that are able to work from home and have some sense of stability in our lives is to maintain solidarity and stay home so that other people aren't exposed and so that those folks who have to continue working can stay as safe as they can.
Thank you for that. So last question here, and I think this is a good segue. So for folks who are fortunate enough to be able to stay at home and show that solidarity, what can they do to pass the time or to, you know, maybe engage in an upcoming political election?
Yeah, so I'll just say a couple quick things that come to mind first. You know, clearly our podcast is a monthly opportunity for folks to get plugged into what we're doing both in Oregon and across the country to protect working people. We want to highlight the struggles of the working class. And so this podcast that you're now listening to, I'd encourage you to do so every single month and go back to listen to all the episodes you've missed. Of course, our social media presence on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram is a great place to stay up to date. We really work hard to make that helpful and relevant to the lives of working people. And so there you'll find resources, you'll find action opportunities. And I'm sure Jeff is excited to talk a little bit about this political season that is challenging, but exciting at the same time.
Yeah, I sure am. So for all of those of you who for the past two election cycles have been begging us to be able to phone bank from home and text from home, boy, do I have a treat for you. Starting the first week of April, we're going to start having phone bank options from home. And I would just say that this feels forever ago, but we all remember coming out of the 2019 legislative session when a good portion of Democrats voted to cut public employees' retirement. And some of them even voted to oppose ensuring prevailing wage requirements on highly subsidized super corporate development. So we have an opportunity this primary cycle to ensure that there are pro-worker Democrats in the legislature, whatever subsequent special sessions come out of COVID and going into the 2021 long session. So there are a handful of contested races. You can find all of our endorsements on our website, and feel free to reach out to me or to Chelsea Watson to plug into our volunteer program.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for taking the time. I know you're both very, very busy fighting for Oregon's workers right now. Thank you to everyone who tuned in to listen. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on whatever service you're using, and stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll see you next time.